Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. I'm your host, John Semperman, with my co-host,
Tim O'Shea.
Tim, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Doing great. Lots happening. This is, some would think, a slow time in the sports world, and it's not.
It's really not. You know, it's funny. We almost thought for a moment of maybe taking a couple week sabbatical here on Skin in the Game.
Yeah, we did. And then we looked at the schedule and we said, World Cup. The NFL's off as we sit here right now.
Well, but
is the NFL really ever off?
It's never off, yeah. And even, you know, more so not here in where, you know, our hometown of Buffalo, because, you know, just a few weeks ago they unveiled and opened the doors of the new Highmark Stadium.
And there's more than a little bit to talk about with that.
So
here we are, no break for us.
No break for us, and that's great. That's great. The business of sports is 24/7, as we've demonstrated. Hey, we have a really interesting guest today. You know, you and I joke a lot about pickleball, right? And there's always this little kind of smirk, and, you know, well, guess what? This is going to be finally our pickleball episode.
And if people could see me, they would see I have a big smile. But it's a smile that means finally, it's here. Yeah, before we even go, why do we joke about pickleball?
You know, I think it's, you know,
I don't quite know.
No, there's these perceptions. First of all, the name is very funny, right?
Yeah.
You know, and there are pickle origins to the name, which has nothing to do with pickles. There, you know, we laugh about it because I think maybe the stereotypes, you know, and part of that stereotype of pickleball is that it's, you know, played in retirement communities, right? I can tell you, and so will our guests tell you, that all of those stereotypes are wrong. Pickleball is big, big business. A matter of fact, over $2 billion business. And even in the last year, there's 15,000 courts, pickleball courts, that are added just in the United States. So it's big business. It's nothing to joke about. There's now professional leagues. There's TV deals. So while the name may still be funny, there's nothing funny about the business. It's big, big business.
No, and it is growing and growing. And I will tell you, John, I was in a conversation the other day with a close friend who owns a country club. Leading question, if there ever was one, what do you think he's considering adding to the country club offerings?
Well, I would say probably converting their tennis courts to pickleball courts.
One of them, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So they're not, and this is good news too, and we're going to get into this on the show today. They're not dropping tennis. It's not good business to have only tennis
right
now. They need to make pickleball easily accessible to people because these folks are already out there playing it.
That's right. That's right. So our guest is the founder, the president of the Pickleball Channel, which is kind of the ultimate media outlet for pickleball fans and business followers. Rusty House is going to join us here very shortly on Skin in the Game. So for all of our listeners who are avid pickleball players or just want to get a little sense of what is this business all about, stay tuned for our interview with Rusty.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a PSA for people out there who want to play pickleball or want to get better at it. The Pickleball Channel, which, you know, you find it online, has plenty of great tutorials as well.
Yeah.
And I found that really useful. Nice little side benefit to prepping for this episode because, John, you don't know this, but I actually enjoy going out and playing pickleball.
That's great.
But I'm not good at it yet.
Well, that's fine. It's what, you know, I think that's the thing about the sport. It's approachability, right?
Yep.
So I think that's what's really been a big benefit for it. And hey, on this program, we're big fans of people just getting out, staying active, you know, whether that's cycling, whether that's playing one of your favorite sports, flag football, or in this case, pickleball, get out, be active. So that's a positive.
Absolutely.
I want to clarify, are you an avid pickleball player or is this a new passion of yours?
I'm an aspiring pickleball. Let me try that one. Pickleball player. You're right. It is a funny name. My wife and I went out one night into a pickleball court at a park with our neighbor and his daughter. So he had a dad, a teenage daughter.
Perfect.
And a middle-aged couple all out there playing. No shock, the very athletic 17-year-old, also flag football player, was the dominant player on the court that day. But it was all fun, and we could all keep up with each other, which tells you a lot about the sport.
Right. And that's, as we get to Rusty, because I don't think we get into the name pickleball and the origins of the sport. That's exactly how it started. Out in the Seattle region, a family did an improvisational game with a small court. Their dog, as rumor has it, was named Pickles. Thus, the sport was built, multi-generational, named after the family dog, Pickles. So there you have it. So with that, let us get to our interview with Rusty Howes from the Pickleball Channel. Rusty Howes, I want to thank you for joining us here on the program today.
That's my pleasure. I appreciate it. And, you know, I think you guys have a unique platform, and I've seen some of the stuff you've done. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. And we often talk about pickleball on the program based upon its growth and the trends and obviously the participation. So glad to finally to get someone on as a guest to talk about pickleball. So that being said, Rusty, why don't you give us a little background on the Pickleball Channel and kind of your road to launching the channel?
Yeah, sure. You know, I sort of often tell the credit goes to some of my team and then some of the amazing people in the space. You know, a lot of people think it's like, how did you have so much foresight and what was the strategic thing? But, you know, we go all the way back to 2012 and pickleball, you know, millions of people, hundreds of millions of people had no idea what it was.
Right.
And actually one of the Huntsman World Senior Games, which is sort of the granddaddy of Senior Olympics, basically, out in Utah, we were making stories just about active boomers and seniors. Pickleball was not on the radar at all. One of my filmmakers was a Huntsman. He was getting these little mini bio type things. And he called me up. I wasn't there that year. I was working with an ultra marathoner, Mike Arrett, who ran across the country honoring fallen service members. And I got this call. He says, everything went great, but there's this one video I don't know how to finish. And of course, he's never said anything like that. He's extremely talented. And like, what's the problem? He's like, well, the guy says, pickleball saved my life. And so that was the beginning of, like, I don't know what it is. Do you know what it is? Literally, we had to call the administration, the heads of the event, to learn what it was. And as we began to try to find a space for some clients to connect and engage with active boomers and seniors, you know, on limited time and limited budget, you know, you're like, where do you go? And of course, everything, so tennis or golf or something like that, which are were full and pre-existing, but we came across pickleball. So at the Huntsman World Senior Games, and we initially were looking to kind of just collaborate with people who were in the space, but nobody was doing a consistent, regular pro media. And so we're like, maybe we'll start the thing. We'll have to do it ourselves, I guess. My wife and I worked in the entertainment industry. She had a lot more experience as well. And prior to our production company, we'd done a lot in that space. So let's call it Pickleball Channel, because if, just like with regular shows, if a show doesn't do well, you cancel the show and you keep going, but you don't shut down the whole channel. So that was the idea. Let's treat this like a traditional media enterprise. Let's treat it. And a lot of people said, well, what are you doing? You know, we don't need pro media and stuff like that. But we wanted to give the people what we thought they were worthy of, because they're amazing. I'm sure by now you've probably heard stories, and you know, the Power Pickleball documentary, there's lots of people talking about how amazing the community is. So we found this amazing community of connected people who love the sport, who are passionate about a sport. And it all kind of began with just trying to kind of share that. And then we, at the very, very beginning, we knew we had to try to serve the community. So Pickleball Channel grew out of having a client who wanted to connect with people, our professional media background. And then I guess our mission as we did it, because it was such an underdog sport, is like, what can we do to try to help this sport grow, to help these people have more of what they love? And it started digitally, of course. You know, it was in the earlier days of the concept of content marketing wasn't as popular. YouTube was even younger, you know, back in 2012, but it was available. It allowed us, just like you said with your show, to kind of reach the world digitally.
Yeah.
And that's how it all kind of started.
So from a media perspective, right place, you know, at an opportune time, Rusty. But when did you realize, from a pickleball perspective and the popularity of the sport, when did you all sit back and say, oh, wow, like, we really did get into this sport at the right time?
Yeah, I think there was consistently like, oh, wow moments. You know, initially like, oh, let's set some goals. And again, going back in time, pickleball's grown. It's massive. But we came from mainstream Hollywood, right? We came from Titanic and Spielberg and all that sort of stuff. So anything we were doing was exponentially smaller in comparison. But let's see if we can get 100,000 views in 12 months. You know, you look at how big we thought it was, but we got like over 200,000, you know, more than we expected. So that was like, oh, wow, what's happening here? But then the exponential curve just kept happening. It was like every month, every event. And so I think it was a progressive, oh, wow. But a couple years in is when I think we knew what was going to happen. But as I was recently in documentary, I said, it happened even faster than we thought. So the curve was always exponential, but it just started going straighter and straighter up. Again, some of the data we'll probably talk about later is, you know, 400 some percent increase over the last 5 years alone. And that's from 2020.
Yeah.
What we saw from 2012 to 2020 was exponential as well.
Yeah, and Rusty, that's how I actually found you. I'm on an American Airlines flight, you know, kind of got 3 hours to kill, and I pop on the in-flight videos, and there it is. What is it? The Power of Pickleball. And it's
a full
documentary on the history and obviously the growth and some of the trials and tribulations that we'll get into.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think for our listeners, what I found so interesting is, you know, I like to say pickleball's a 60-year overnight success, right? It's really,
yeah,
so again,
sure.
Give us the kind of the 30,000 foot view, which is, by the way, about how many miles or how many feet I was in the air when I watched this, kind of the history.
Yeah,
of,
exactly.
Yeah, the history of pickleball and its origins and its origins.
Yeah, that it's, you talk about the film, Bespoke Works did an amazing job. It's even on our flight here, you know, we're like, oh, I wonder if it's still running. And it's weird to sort of see yourself.
Yeah.
And then of course the people sitting next to you, they're like, is that you? The film was originally going to be sort of a docuseries kind of chronicling some of what you're talking about. Like, oh, let's do a history episode. Let's do a thing on the business. And things were changing so much and so fast that some of the stuff that was shot became kind of, you know, old. And so the vision shifted to say, let's do a story that's kind of more evergreen that really kind of talks about the whole thing. And so that whole thing began in, you know, 1965, Bainbridge Island. So a family, the super short version of the history, you know, family looking for something to do. You know, throughout history, people have made up games, right? I don't know who the first person who made up hide and go seek was, right? So somebody, they grabbed some stuff, they hobbled it together. And they made up this game, and then it evolved. Of course, what are the rules? You change things like that, like the kitchen and the non-volley zone. It evolves and it becomes something. And then there was a growth and kind of a plateau, and, you know, a governing body got created. The Snowbirds was a huge part of it. So a lot of people say stereotypically, you know, old people, which of course is nowhere near the reality today. There's still an insane number of active, vibrant, older 50 plusers playing. But the sport is much bigger than that now. But it sort of grew, and the Snowbirds in Arizona and Florida and stuff like that began to kind of still be active, and it grew. And we began to see kind of this exponential tipping point. Some of what we did, we were trying to create, hey, here's a video that an ambassador can take to their parks and rec or the city council and say, hey, let me tell you about this really cool sport. And like, here's a professional video. And you know, then the tennis versus pickleball back in the day, there's still some of that, but a lot of the tennis industry has said, holy cow, how can we make money off of this, right?
Yeah.
You know, you'd be hard pressed to find tennis people who aren't trying to capitalize on pickleball, but the Snowbirds grew it and the governing bodies. But, you know, really the huge explosion happened during COVID, when there was only so many sports that were approved to be socially distant. And because pickleball, right, again, like I said, it was growing. But just like so many things in life, whether it's compound interest or whatever, you get to this tipping point and enough people are talking about it and more people are talking about it. But pickleball is uniquely and I think sort of even exponentially more diverse and multi-generational and accessible and community-based besides just the sport itself. So it's fun to play. But when you add all that other stuff on top of it in a season of the history of the world, unlike any other, when people are lonely and they're struggling, pickleball met a deep and profound need. In fact, we did a little story about the blue zones, if you heard about that. One of the critical things about longevity in blue zones is that community piece, that active thing. And the story kind of talked about how pickleball fits in with that and is part of that. And So I think that's the major tipping point. And then since then, there's so many other things, but maybe that's enough for now. I'll let you ask some clarifying questions.
We're here with Rusty Howes from the Pickleball Channel. Rusty, you began to talk about some of the, at least one of the stereotypes that I believe is out there about pickleball, which is that it's for older people. Not true, or at least not singularly true. What are some of the other stereotypes you come across? And on the flip side, what's the reality of those?
Well, for sure, once upon a time, I think that's less now. But still, some people are like, oh, that's kind of old people game. They'll talk about it slow and it's boring. There are versions of every sport that are slower. If you go to the Huntsman World Senior Games and you watch the 80-year-old track and field people or the 80-year-old basketball people, they're going to be a lot slower than the 20-somethings. But within pickleball, even within that, you'll have like a 25-something and like a 60-year-old playing. And there's these rallies that can happen that are much faster and much more athletic. You know, every once in a while, you'll find some young person who went out and tried to play singles pickleball. And actually, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm at like 169. My heart's going through my chest. So the athleticism necessary on a pro level now is very, very high. You have legitimate, as people say, what is a pro athlete? Depends on the sport you're playing, but there's an element of endurance. There's an element of cardiovascular strength and then accuracy that comes into play. A lot of people think, oh, it's not a real sport. If they go see high level pro pickleball played, then that's off the table.
Yeah.
And certainly we've begun to see that now. You have, you know, people, NFL quarterbacks and, you know, Andre Agassi, he's older, but you have plenty of people who would definitely be considered pro athletes recognizing that this is a significant sport. So those are a couple of them. I mean, there's a few more, but go ahead.
Yeah, no. And is it, you know, so demographically it's multi-generational. Are there geographic pockets? Obviously you said 1965, you know, the sport was founded by a family up in the Pacific Northwest, but have you seen now pockets of growth and pockets of participation, kind of growing quicker than other parts of the country?
For sure, it's kind of the Pacific Northwest and then the snowbirds in Florida and the snowbirds kind of the Phoenix sort of area mm-hmm. were major growth points and hubs, right? The villages in Florida was famous for this 50 plus community that had a whole bunch of courts. And you would even start to say, well, what level skill player was there? Are they a 5-0 from the Northwest or are they a 5-0 from like the Midwest? And people would sort of say, these players are better than those. So for sure, it has grown nationally. When we first started in Los Angeles, there was way, way, way less. I live in the LA area. Ironically, even though some of the numbers say there's a lot of players, I live in a city of 300,000 and there's no permanent dedicated pickleball courts that are available to the public that aren't private. So it's growing. The court construction's growing all over the place. For sure, the Midwest and other parts of the country that kind of were not available. And then the cities like New York and LA, where real estate is harder to come by. If I'm in rural Georgia, it's much easier for me to set up four courts because the dirt, the real estate is cheaper. LA, New York, you know, you're struggling to find places to play. And if you want to try to build a court, you're talking millions and millions and millions of dollars just to get that, you know, that space. And so that's why unique things like City Pickle, which is in the summer times, they take over the rink in New York City, and they're finding different unique places and ways to play.
Yeah, I was just walking by City Pickle in New York a couple of weeks ago. And not only is it there, but I think anybody who's been to New York City knows the crowds that the, I believe we're talking about the Rockefeller ice rink, the crowds that it gets. Well, there were crowds waiting to go in and play pickleball, which leads me to a question for you, Rusty.
Sure.
So what are some of the trends in demographics? And I'm going to add another one in there. Are there any that have surprised you or, you know, even delighted you and say, oh, I didn't see really little kids doing this, but they are, for example. Any surprises out there?
Yeah, so surprise in the timing of it, not surprise that it happened, right? So even in the early days, we had the sport actually was in schools. That's kind of where it was growing at one point. But, you know, you're in junior high and high school back in the 70s and 80s. We're not as much of a connected world as we are now. And so it sort of disappear, right? Because it wasn't accessible and it wasn't something. What you're now starting to have is at a youth level, we were just at the US Open pickleball championship. So the juniors and the youth that are playing now are on par with what the pros used to be 10 years ago. I mean, it's the level of skill that you're seeing. So I'm delighted how much more youth there is. I'm delighted how much more, even the high school and college. So the level of that participation, we're definitely going to be seeing formal, whether it's club or NCAA, there's a lot of massive lacrosse club-based teams that are supported by the universities. So I don't want to get into NCAA versus club, but large-scale competition of pickleball throughout the collegiate and I think eventually high school level will happen. But the other part I'm very delighted about is that it hasn't shifted away. The numbers, as I talk about, the bell curve has widened, but you still have a very large amount of these 45-plussers, right? The part I'm delighted about is that the one hasn't pushed out the other. Sometimes I think we notice like, oh, this becomes a young person's game. Pickleball is still an everybody game.
So I'm on that note too about, sure. And again, thinking of particularly people playing at the scholastic level, middle school, high school, even college, do pickleball and tennis complement each other? Or do you find that they're competing with each other for participation?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. There's certain people who love both tennis and pickleball, and they'll talk about there's benefits to them. You'll hear some people who will talk about, typically that's also a pickleball person. They'll talk about their hand speed is increased up the net because pickleball, when you're so close, you can have these hands battles that you don't really have in tennis. You're not going to find a tennis only person who's going to talk about the benefits of both. From a revenue standpoint, facilities that have brought in pickleball, you know, we did a story about Bobby Riggs. And so, you know, this is Bobby Riggs. It was tennis only, and Bobby Riggs' little museum was there. And so the owners basically say to the other members, do you want your dues to go up or do you want your dues to, you know, stay? Because pickleball coming in brings additional revenue into these facilities. Now, the tennis people that wanted it not to be crowded, the tennis people that wanted it to be, I think in the documentary, we make reference to people, sometimes the tennis people are like, hey, shut up. Because pickleball is much more of a fun, kind of friendly, party-ish atmosphere. You also have 16 people playing in the same square footage that you'd have four. So purely from a mathematics standpoint, there have been tennis courts that have given way to pickleball courts.
Sure.
And tennis people, they don't like that. From a city standpoint, if I'm a city and I only have so many resources and I can serve 16 people with open play, because it rotates typically, you don't have someone book for a whole hour. I could serve 20 people easily in the same square footage that historically I served four. So those are some of the reasons why they can be complementary, but absolutely tennis has lost some square footage to pickleball. And there are some people who are choosing, people who are maybe older, who are saying, you know what, I can be a little bit more active on this court in this space because it is less physically demanding. Absolutely. Andre Agassi recently was saying, you know, he calls, you know, tennis is the thing, right? You know, if you are young and you are covering a whole tennis court and you're, that's so much bigger. So there are things that are easier to play about pickleball and that gives accessibility. So some people have left tennis and sure, I think because of the growth of the pro thing, there's semi-pro tennis players or people who are maybe D1 in college or something like that, who are like, I'm going to go into pickleball because I can make my career in pickleball right now better than I could make my career in tennis. So in that way, there's some loss there.
Yeah. We're with Rusty Howes, the producer and founder of Pickleball Channel, getting people, young, old, out to play, accessibility, inclusiveness. And I think pickleball checks those boxes. But now, Rusty, it's like, now we have private equity and now we have some walls and some borders being put up. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are you worried about as the sport continues to grow?
I have my own business. I have my own company. So, you know, I'm a capitalist, but I also, there's different ways of doing business. And there's times in which exclusivity and putting somebody else out of business is a tactic. And you're starting to see that. So some of my concerns is this aggressive, let me shut someone else down or let me beat someone else. I mean, we see it in sports sometimes, right? You know, two teams, they're out to win, but can you have good sportsmanship even though they equally want to win just as bad? And so some of the good sportsmanship of pickleball has been lost. One of the things that got us here is sort of this open play and this connectivity. Mm-hmm. But as the number of players is growing faster than the places to play is, then you're going to start to have things that shut off. And people are like, I don't want to wait that long anymore. You know, if I'm hosting a thing and I have three courts and I get up to 30 some people, you know, they're waiting four or five games before they can come back in. So some of that is impacting people's patience, impacting people's both the behavior on the recreational level you know, you didn't used to see it, but now like there's a fight or the police have been called out. So some of those things are difficult. So that's a player thing that has changed. And then on the pro level, there was a camaraderie. And I think they, Navratil or Thomas Shields, sometimes they called it the Kumbaya era of pickleball, where the top level players were still kind of friends. Well, now, you know, people are not all friends, right? And when there's big money on the line and who's cheating and who's not cheating and are people rigging their paddles, trying to have a legal overpowered. So some of that has come into the space. Whereas back in the day, one of the reasons we got into it is our client, Highlands Leg Cramps. They had a product called Highlands Leg Cramps. We were watching a gold medal match and one of the players got a leg cramp. And this guy comes over to help this person, right? So you have these two times. And I come to find out the person who's helping the one with the cramp is the father of her opponent. But they're just like, that's not what this is about. Like, you know, we want to see a good match finish. You know, there's that kind of thing. That's gone. So the private equity part, there's fights that are happening. And there's people who kind of want to own the world. They literally have said, we want to own pickleball. I think that's not good for the world. You know, you look at so many other sports and how do you have international collaboration? It's not just about the Olympics, but some of the politics is getting messy and is unresolved currently.
Yeah, I've read recently there's kind of a valuation of $2.2 billion is what's there now, rough give or take, with pickleball, which is expected to almost triple the valuation of pickleball over the next 10 years or so. And you're seeing, and Rusty, you see it more than I, you know, it's the retail, kind of the entertainment, food, dine, pickleball, right? It's the media, the media consolidation. And now these specific kind of leagues, whether it's Major League Pickleball or others. So where does the industry stand currently with, you know, commercialization and private equity? What are some of the big topics that you're watching?
Yeah, so some of the big leaders, you have the UPA, which that was actually founded recently. You have the PPA, which is the PPA Tour, and the MLP. So Tom Dundon and some others acquired Pickleball Central. Pickleball Central, which is kind of like the Amazon.com of pickleball. I mean, they were the largest online digital retailer, and they did some amazing things really helping the sport. They acquired Pickleball Tournaments, a software company. Pickleball Tournaments is the leading. So UPA has Pickleball Inc., Pickleball Central and Pickleball Tournaments, they own a lot of retail software, as well as then they have now acquired the PPA, the Tour, as well as MLP. Those are all kind of within one big giant UPA thing. On the other side, the other kind of major tour is the APP, which also has its own tour and players. So at the US Open recently, the APP play, some of those APP players were playing at the US Open, but the PPA players were not allowed to play at the US Open. So the tournament, the US Open Pickleball Championships, which sort of took pro pickleball to a whole nother level, Ben Johns and all these other people, that's kind of where they kind of got their thing. That was the goal that you wanted. They can't play there anymore. A little bit of the Live Golf PGA type thing that's happening.
Yeah.
There's some of the old school pickleball paddle manufacturers have been acquired as well. So everybody kind of knowing everybody, mom and pop sort of thing, that's gone away. More and more manufacturing overseas, of course. Once upon a time, people were making paddles here. You know, people are in their living room wrapping handles. You're hard-pressed to find that happening now.
And by the way,
and of course, with
they're expensive too.
Go ahead,
a pickleball racket is not, or I should say a paddle is
paddle,
not. They're a lot more expensive than you think.
Yeah. Once upon a time, you know, you get a great paddle for, you know, $70. That was like the top of the line, right? So now they're 300 plus.
Wow.
That's a whole nother conversation, right? It's like people are asking. It's not just me. Other people are like, why are our paddle prices so high?
Yeah.
You know, we know that it doesn't cost as much. I mean, people know enough. I get emails all the time from companies in China saying, hey, we'll make you a paddle. People can reverse engineer legally and kind of get an idea. And the paddle technology has changed and shifted, and some of it is patented, but you can get a really good paddle that's legal and you're not paying that. So there's speculation in terms of that. The price of the ball, people are wondering how come that hasn't come down. The business is happening and people are riding high on some of that. And they're like realizing, wow, equipment, that's a, you know, that's kind of the easiest point of entry. Any Joe can pretty much start a paddle company, which is problematic in itself, right? But you know, you used to know who the paddle companies are, and that's just like off the charts. There are just so many. happening now.
So this seems like a simple question, Rusty, to wrap us up. I imagine it might be a loaded question because there is so much going on in the world of pickleball. Crystal ball it for us, though. What's next? What should we keep our eye out for in this sport?
My hope to keep our eye out for is people somehow figuring out. I mean, at some point, the politics will have to get figured out. I suppose the dust could settle kind of like boxing. You have two major things and they never figure it out. And we don't have boxing in the Olympics. For sure, crystal ball, more and more youth in high school. So you'll see that growing. It's already happening. And you'll have formal youth type pickleball stuff versus just recreational fun. My hope is, just like with DVDs and many other things, is that the market's price points will sort of level out and Joe Schmo will be able to get a really good $70 paddle and not feel like, oh, that's a crappy one that doesn't count. But that'll be interesting, right? You know, people are even talking about, you know, the manufacturers saying, hey, okay, nobody can pay less than this to try to keep the prices high. But at some point, you know, you have tennis rackets, you have tennis balls, every sport has accessible sort of product. And for sure you have that, but it's not really embraced as respectable intermediate professional product. I think that will happen. You're going to have more businesses popping up in relation to it. So you talked about the entertainment. Mm-hmm, pickleball right. will become more of a part of culture rather than just a fringe thing, if that makes sense, right? You know, it's people talk about basketball and soccer and different things like that. It's just something everybody kind of knows about. So it's sort of normalized to a certain extent. Pickleball still has a little bit of that. Yeah, I heard about that thing. So that will have both pros and cons to it. That makes sense. For sure, there's going to be more things that are built, but you're also going to have some of these pickleball businesses going out of business because we're old enough to remember the internet boom, right? And so I remember pop.com and all these things I worked in Hollywood, just like all these, it's just easy money. But then some of them, you know, fall aside because it's harder to have a long-term reputable business than people think. So those are just a few things perhaps, and we'll see how right or wrong.
It's interesting, Rusty, you bring that up because, you know, a lot of the articles I read is at times people thought pickleball was a trend. Think about CrossFit, right? CrossFit was the hottest thing, and then the bubble kind of burst. And what I'm though hearing and believing, and you can verify this, is pickleball is not a trendy thing. We really think it's here to stay. And if the ownership or the management and the private equity coming into it should really focus on how do we grow this versus, again, putting those walls up, having those barriers.
Yeah, I think I said this, I've been quoted to say this multiple times. One of the things I believe very passionately about is that regardless of some of those parts of it, like the big money that's floating around with the pros and all that sort of stuff, those things can go away. Those businesses could collapse, but the millions of people who are having a great time playing a thing and then competing at a semi-pro amateur, like they don't have to have a career as a pro pickleball player, but pickleball is not going anywhere in the sense of this is a great thing to go do because it's just so accessible, right? I mean, I regularly am playing a good game with an 83-year-old. You know, there's no other sport that I can do that. You know, my heart rate's up, his heart rate's up. I'm not in the best shape in the world, but I'm not horrible. And so to have that, to have literally teens, 20s, 30s, you can have four generations playing at one time a legitimate game, and you pretty much can't do that anywhere else. That's independent of the politics. That's independent of the pros and the tours and things like that. So that core, that base, which is part of why the people are so excited to invest in it, the foundation, the player base, the number of people who aren't just fans, but actual participants is off the charts.
Rusty, that's a great way to wrap things up because I believe everything you just said, the multi-generational aspects of pickleball, right? The community aspects were really is what founded the sport in 1965 in a backyard of a family who was looking for ways to come together. And that's hopefully we can keep that vision alive, which was the intended part of the sport in the first place.
Yeah, and what an origin story. Rusty, we really appreciate you coming on Skin in the Game to, not only tell us the story of pickleball, but where it's headed, and I don't know about you, John, but learn a whole lot more about what's going on inside this sport. Yeah, so thank you.
Yeah, and I think if any of our listeners want more of the story in the background, what is it, Rusty, the Power of Pickleball was the documentary that they should...
Yeah, the documentary, The Power of Pickleball, that's on Amazon, iTunes, it's on Documentary Plus, or on pretty much every airline, so if you're on a plane. And then, you know, you have the governing body, USA, Pickleball Channel. There's so many resources. You Google pickleball, it's all over the place nowadays.
Yeah. Well, and thank you.
But I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
No,
yeah,
keep up the great work and continue to grow the game. And thank you for joining us here on Skin in the Game.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rusty.
Tim, I think we found one person that truly is an expert on all pickleball.
And glad we did. It took a while.
It did. You know, we've been talking.
Not that they're not out there, by the way.
You know, it's, yeah. You know, we talk a lot about pickleball, and sometimes we kind of do it in jest or we laugh about it. We shouldn't be laughing about it.
When you say we, do you mean you and me, or do you mean culture in general?
I think culture in general.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think we've ripped on pickleball.
No, we don't rip on it.
But I hear people do it. I hear
people
do
it. And you know something? It's a growing business. You know, we always give accolades to, you know, flag football and women's sport, which we should. But pickleball is growing as much as any other sport as far as participation, as far as equipment and retail sales. So I'm really glad we had the conversation with Rusty.
Yeah, me too. And John, I'm sitting here thinking about different racket sports and racquetball, badminton, tennis, of course.
And by the way, it's great you brought up racquetball had a day.
Yeah, it did. And that's where I'm going with this. And we've both been around a few decades here.
I think you have
just a touch, and it really is just a touch on me. But
we were there for these days.
We were there for these days, and I remember the racquetball days. And, you know, so there's part of me that's wondered, is pickleball going to fade the way racquetball did, or is it here to stay?
Yeah. And
this conversation's making me think, pickleball's not going anywhere, but what do you think?
It's so funny you bring that up, and I'm really going to date myself, and this was more of a Northeast Ohio thing. There were a chain of racquetball bars. Remember we talk about entertainment, right? How now there's, you know, entertainment about Topgolf and now pickleball. Tim, you're going to laugh. The name of this franchise was Harvey Wallbangers.
Oh, I remember.
Do you
I'm
really?
Going to date myself, too. I think I was a little young to go, but I remember there being a Harvey Wallbangers.
It had four or six racquetball courts, you know, lounge, bar. You know, it was maybe it was before its time, but they were out there. And now today, fast forward, 30, 40 years later, you know, we're seeing places like Pickle and Waffles and these other, you know, pubs where it's restaurant, bar, pickleball. So I think the more things change, the more they are the same. Do I think pickleball is going to go the way of jazzercise and racquetball?
Jazzercise. Even the word, you may need to explain that for a lot of people out there. I didn't see that coming as we're talking about pickleball, but
well,
it's fair.
I can't explain jazzercise, but it was an aerobics
trend
to music. I do not think pickleball is going to fall into this category of one-hit wonders. And I think the one of the biggest reasons is, as Rusty alluded to, this sport started in 1965, so it's been around. It has already been generational. And I think as we see more municipal courts, because the sport, here's the thing about the sport. Unlike Harvey Wallbangers or unlike jazzercise, it really is, you keep laughing.
I'm still stuck on jazzercise.
What I can say is, it is a multi-generational sport. Whether you're 12 years old or 82 years old, you can compete. And also, it doesn't have the barriers that some of these other sports have. Because if you build courts in a municipal area, in a park, Heck, Tim, you can play in a parking lot with a net. So I think that it has some innate qualities when it comes to being approachable that are going to give it the legs to last.
Yeah, and the nice thing about pickleball is while it's certainly not an easy sport to do well, it's a relatively easy sport to go out and play and feel like you're functioning, right? And that's where I would differentiate it from tennis. You know, tennis court is bigger, tennis ball is faster.
And tennis courts take up more space. You can get four pickleball courts into what was formerly a tennis court.
Anyway, I guess what I would differentiate it is you can play pickleball without taking a lesson.
Yeah.
You know, you can go out there and you can have a game or two or 10 without taking a lesson will help, but you can do it without. Tennis, not that you can't do that with tennis, but there's a lot of people, I'm one of them, who give me a tennis racket, tell me to go out there and actually, you know, play a match. It would take me a few days, maybe a few weeks to warm it up. So it's nice to see a sport like pickleball being at the top because people really can go out and have fun with it quickly. And if they want to, build on it.
And in some cases now build a professional career, which is crazy.
Which, can I pause this here?
Yes.
Which is not, by the way, because I feel like I've just ripped on tennis, and I'm not, because that's an incredible sport and a great example of a lifelong sport. What did you make of it when I asked Rusty about, you know, pickleball and tennis, and is pickleball, you know, a good complement to tennis, or is it a competitor? And he said, well, you know, depend who you're talking to.
Yeah.
But I'll put it this way, you know, tennis centers who I take it are making a smart decision are making pickleball part of what they do because it'll drive revenue and drive participation.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think right now they're frenemies.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think that if you can make facilities that can cater to both groups, you know, there's kind of a ladder, you know, you can maybe go between both sports. I think where you're seeing the competitive nature, and this will get us to the conversation on what we're seeing at a municipal level, you know, I'm sure the USTA does not like seeing tennis courts being retaped and reconfigured for pickleball, because then you are losing that grassroots participation.
We're sitting here because we're pro sports, and we're always talking about how do you get more youth involved in sports? How do you get people involved in sports that when you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, you can keep playing? And, you know, tennis is one of those. So that is, I guess that's one takeaway from this conversation that alarms me a little. Is it, you know, is it nothing against pickleball, but is it taking away from a sport that could use as many people and is a great sport for as many people as are willing to play it?
Well, the one cloud that is over pickleball, and Rusty from the Pickleball Channel did also allude to this, is money, right? Unfortunately, when there's more money going into it, and some of that is private equity, right? Trying to extract as much money out of the sport as possible, that could be a problem. And, you know, Rusty did allude to the fact that equipment cost, the cost of a pickleball racket, has doubled over the last 5 or so years because of consolidation, because of private equity. That's a problem because that's a border or a barrier that gets put up. And the other is, you know, you've got different associations and governing bodies that are now competing. So it's just something to keep in mind. You know, they've got to keep the focus that this is supposed to be a sport for everyone. This is supposed to be a sport that's accessible and fun. And unless you can give me an example, Tim, of where infusion of cash, consolidation, and private equity has ended up in a good thing, I'm going to be a little bit skeptical.
I can think of, I can think of some sports companies that have benefited from that, right? And we've talked to some on this show, but not when there's youth players involved, right? And that's a differentiation here because as I think about it, you know, there's some great growing pro leagues out there that have benefited from or could use
the capital, sure.
Right? That is very, very different from taking something that's, you know, intended or at least at its best when it's a game for kids, for families.
Or youth and, sports in general.
And when private equity, when capitalism comes first for those, it doesn't necessarily make it more available to people. And that's nothing against private equity. That's certainly nothing against capitalism. This is a sports business show.
Right.
I think we're all about
right.
that.
Right.
Pickleball, that's something I didn't expect here too. I always thought it was a pretty accessible sport, you know, because you need a racket and a ball and access to a court. And the third thing, if it's available to municipal, you know, at a playground, you got it.
Right.
The first two things don't seem like they should be that pricey.
They shouldn't, but again, right. you know, you there are a lot of groups trying to capitalize on the popularity. I don't see the popularity shrinking. I continue, even in the communities that I visit or communities I live in, I continue to see the tennis courts or other park areas being converted to pickleball. Which, by the way, you know, that also comes with some challenges because, you know, if you follow the news, you follow the local media, you know, there is noise that's involved with the pickleball racket.
They are noisy little rackets. That is true.
And there's a lot of residents who do not like being awoken by the sound of a pickleball game at 7 in the morning.
Has that been you?
It hasn't been me.
No, you don't live that close to a
pickleball. I don't live that close to it, but that has been something that has followed, and I think as off the conversation with Rusty, he did mention that there is equipment that can help mitigate that, but it's still something that, you know, there's an issue that needs to be addressed.
It sounds like that costs some money too. Yeah. You know, so now all that said, looking here from the Sports and Fitness Industry Association, in 2025, more than 24 million Americans alone played pickleball. That's up from 20 million in 2024.
That's
almost a 23% increase in 1 year.
Right. And what I've followed a little bit is the international growth is even growing at a bigger rate. So yeah, it's growing. And I'm so glad we finally talked to someone in the business to talk about the business of pickleball.
Oh, for sure. Thank you, Rusty Howes, for joining us.
And thank you for listening to Skin in the Game. Until next time.
Skin in the Game is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. You can catch up with all our episodes on btpm.org or on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel. Thanks for listening.